Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Legacy Tapes, a series of podcasts exploring how to leave something lasting in the ephemeral medium of theatre. And I want to begin today's episode by giving a massive thank you shout out to Amber Massey Blomfeld, who is our first patron as part of our Patreon fundraising initiative. Every episode, all of the work that goes into these podcasts is done purely for the love of it. And recently we started a funding campaign through Patreon, just to allow essentially me, Rebecca, to be paid a little bit for the work that I do, and probably to learn to record a little bit better so there's some better sound quality. So if you feel like that's a good thing, I'd really appreciate it if you would follow Amber's lead and visit patreon.com/thelegacytapes. I'm here today with Paul Hunter, the co-founder and artistic director of Told by an Idiot. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Hello. So we just had to turn this on in a hurry because we were going to start talking. So do you want to tell me what you were about to say just then?
I was just about to say, because we were touching on the notion of, you said something rather interesting, which was, how do you kind of leave a legacy for something that's so ephemeral? And I think that's a really intriguing thought somehow. And I've just been working in the rehearsal room this morning with the brilliant Joss Hooban, co-founder of Complicité and extraordinary master of all things physical comedy. And I think it's very intriguing when, and our work obviously fits in this tradition, and the show we're currently working on about Charlie Chaplin and Stan Laurel certainly did, is that when you're working on work that, where there isn't always a record of it, it's kind of been handed on, it's been passed on by performer to performer. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily exist in some archive or in a script.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that legacy thing sits in the people themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Joss and certainly early Complicité shows were a massive influence on us. And they gave us permission, I think, Hayley and I and John, to do what we do. Not to copy them, but the license to go, oh, you mean you can do that? That's, you can allowed. Make something that, yeah, that's allowed.
Yeah.
And we all know in life, sometimes we need permission. We need to go, someone needs to go before us.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, in a way, that kind of feels that has something continues, or has something has a legacy.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, because one of the reasons I sort of wanted to talk to you for this was that I remember you teaching me way back when, you won't remember it, like years ago, and you saying, a couple of things you're saying, and one of them was, if it's bad, make it worse. And that, I think I say that in every rehearsal process I'm in, like, whatever this is, let's dig in and make it more awful. Which makes it funnier, obviously, and then that gap between horror and like disaster and joy. And so there's something really interesting about the legacy that kind of spins out of when you're a company like Told by an Idiot, who is sort of making their own way with lots and lots of influences from the past, but distilling it in your own way. Are you aware of the impact that your work might have or have had?
It's an interesting thing, because I think in some ways you plough on and you make it from the beginning. You're excited in something and an idea and the relationships, the dynamics between people, Hayley, me and John in the early days. And you're not really conscious necessarily of the effect it might have. You are, hopefully, if it's well received, but you're kind of caught up in that, really. And then sometimes that kind of grows around you. And I think that probably happened a bit to us, in a sense, over the years, and it's 26 years now. I suppose I'm always very flattered and intrigued when younger artists or companies maybe cite us in some shape or form. Mm. I always find that a really intriguing idea, I suppose. But I'm always firmly of the belief that the most exciting rooms are when they're a real mix of personalities and generations. So, you know, again, in the room at the moment, the Chaplin and Laurel, we have two brilliant young performers playing those two characters mixed with, you know, Joss and myself. And so I suppose I'm aware of the fact that hopefully we've had some impact, but I think I'm probably slightly more fascinated and passionate about how you stay relevant, or how one, whatever that means, but how you stay present. And I think one of the biggest things, mainly because, again, we're working with a jazz musician, is the way some really great jazz musicians like Miles Davis always look to the younger generation of performers. And I think there is a danger sometimes as you progress that you end up working with your peers and with your collaborators, and they remain...
nobody thinks differently.
Exactly, and I think we need that provocation. So I'm pleased that maybe we've had some kind of impact, but I think we constantly need provoking and refreshing from lots of different places.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to go, because we jumped straight in, because otherwise we'd forget to say things.
Yeah.
But going backwards, so company founded in 1993.
Correct.
You and Hayley and John.
Correct.
Tell me about that process. What made you go, I am going to start a company, I'm not going to be a jobbing actor?
Well...
even though you still are jobbing out.
Well, yes, exactly. Still looking for work.
Yeah.
We met at Middlesex Poly in 1986. Hayley and I were performers. John was a teacher. We were students. And he was part of our course, and his teaching was different to anybody else's or anything I'd ever encountered in terms of its concentration on spontaneity and the body and movement and mass. So there were a core of us that got very excited by John's teaching, and I think it had the perfect combination that all teaching should have. It generated a combination of excitement and fear in all of us. So you went to the class with that brilliant tension between terror, but I've got to go. And then luckily, I think something... John identified in Hayley and I something that happened when we played together or improvised.
Right.
And we were encouraged by that, obviously. We didn't analyse it, and neither have we ever... When we subsequently left, John, wonderfully for us, said, you should do something together. And Hayley and I went away and met in a cafe, I remember, in Camden Town, and proceeded to have no ideas at all. So we then said, look, why don't we go away and try and be actors?
Yeah.
And at that point, you had to get your equity card as well to be an actor.
Yeah,
so we both went off. Being mates, we were always going to stay in touch. And about 5 years later... I found a tiny episode in 100 Years of Solitude by Garcia Marquez, and we went to John, and we made a show, and it became our first show in Edinburgh. Right at the heart of that beginning is the reason why we're still going, I would say. Because we didn't have an idea, and we went away, that sense of being a group and then departing and coming back has meant we've carried on. I think if we'd have stayed together and made a show straight away and been a company, maybe we might have gone a few years, but we wouldn't go anywhere near this. I think the sense of going away and coming back has kept us fresh and interested, I suppose. But even when we went to Edinburgh with that first show, we weren't thinking about starting a company. The reason really was we wanted to make something that no one had done before. We didn't want to do a play off the shelf. We wanted to say, whatever happens, however bad this experience in Edinburgh might be, at least we can say no one has done this show before.
Yeah.
And that was our thinking, really. And then luckily, I think with a combination of luck and good fortune and the right people seeing it, it kind of took off. And it was only after that that we thought, OK, maybe there's something
maybe
more
this
in
this. Maybe
this
should be a thing.
Exactly. But we certainly didn't set out to form a company, no.
And do you still go away and come back?
Yeah, definitely. I mean... Hayley is now an associate of the company, so she comes and goes. I come and go to work as an actor outside of the company, and sometimes, less so now, but to direct outside of the company. And I think that, I mean, on one simple level, if you go away and you have a brilliant experience, you come back and you go, wow, I've learned so much, we did this, I can pass that on. If you've had a terrible experience...
You're like, I love you all.
Exactly, you come back and go, thank God it's you not again.
Yeah.
So it's a win-win, really.
Yeah.
You can't really lose on that. You know?
And also it means that you're continually kind of feeding your well, right?
Like
you're refilling your well.
And remaining curious, hopefully.
Yeah. So... You said something really interesting about wanting to do something that no one else had done. And just kind of thinking back, because I was a tiny child at that point. Well, not tiny, but middle-sized child. And I was just kind of thinking about sort of the 90s and kind of the growth of new writing as a genre and sort of what you were doing at that point was not that. It was you were the anti well made play. Mm-hmm. You were the well made something else, or the, you know, the well clowned or devolved. I don't know what the word is. So what was that? Were you aware of yourself being kind of slightly countercultural in how you worked, or did it feel like that, or am I history? You know,
no. It's an interesting point. If I look back to that period in the early 90s and then the mid 90s when we got going. I think post Complicité there was a raft of companies that maybe had come out of Lecoq in Paris and various places in the UK, Bretton Hall, yeah. Middlesex for us. I mean, Phelim and Improbable were a couple of years above us. So there were places that were generating people who wanted to make work in a slightly different way. But then inevitably, certainly in this country, you get labelled very quickly. And we fell under the banner of physical theatre, which we always reacted against and found slightly ludicrous and being firmly of the belief that all theatre is physical.
It should be. I'm not sure. Sadly, not always, I think.
So I think we kind of... There was a kind of avenue that we were kind of... Or a box we were pushed into. Mm. I think we were always conscious that, for us, it was new work. Mm-hmm. We were primarily interested in making new stuff. And, you know, as we've grown older, I think we see our work very much as new writing. If we go... When we take our work abroad, we're just seen as a British company doing new work. Because we write collaboratively in a room and there isn't a single authorial voice, doesn't mean it's not writing.
No, I totally agree with you, but there's a lot of snobbery about
God. Which is why I think in the early days, when our shows said devised by the company, I think we maybe gave a stick to be beaten with in the sense that people, if they didn't particularly take to it, often the criticism was these people need a writer. What they need is a...
Right.
And I think some of our shows were better than others. Of course they were. And I love working with writers, which sometimes do. But I was firmly of the belief that work of great rigour and great validity can be created collaboratively. Mm. I don't think... I suppose we... I suppose there was enough of a group of us at that time, some of which, of course, have fallen by the wayside. I think what maybe defined us slightly more was a real desire and commitment to making sure that whatever we did, that the spoken word or the text we created had the same rigour and strength as our physical work. Mm-hmm. We didn't want people to go, oh, well, they're great physically, but the text is a bit rubbish. So we really committed to that, really. But I don't know. Yeah, I suppose that there was a kind of an area of that physical world that we were bracketed with, but we've never kind of thought of ourselves as particularly countercultural. And I think it's weird, isn't it? Things come in and out of fashion.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people are the hot thing, and then someone else is, and that, you know, that's the way it is.
Yeah, and I definitely remember kind of coming out of college and drama school, and you guys feeling like you guys were really cool, like really, really cool, early noughties, I guess, and sort of feeling like, because I'd come from such a traditional, like, Shakespeare, read the text, look at the verse, background, that this idea of something that wasn't words as a starting point felt really revolutionary to me. And coming out of drama school and being aware of almost being these two pillars of, like, the stuff that you did and Complicité did and Improbable did and Knee High and, you know, that family of work. Yeah. And then there's the stuff that, like, the other people do. Really aware of that. And sort of... And now my practice for the last however long, 15 years, has been so much about contemporary performance, especially for the last decade, which feels really like there's a straight line through from your family of work through to what's going on now on kind of the cutting edge of weirdy theatre in a way that it doesn't relate in quite the same way to the book that you start with.
Yeah.
Are you aware of that?
I think I became not more aware of it, but I went out up to Edinburgh this year for the first time in a long time. We haven't taken a show there for years, and I went to help out on a friend's show and then saw a lot of work and very consciously chose to see things that I didn't know about, not heard of, or someone recommended. And I saw some things which are clearly, you know, like Ship Theatre I saw for the first time.
Oh, the ships. I love
the
ships.
And I really enjoyed it. I really had a great evening. And I just heard about them and I'd read about them.
And they're idiots.
They are. Yeah. They're really interesting performers because, of course, they're kind of anti-theatre in a sense, in a playful and provocative way. But their relationship with the audience and their anarchy, it really chimed with me.
Yeah.
I mean, they're maybe more, certainly in the show I last saw, maybe more fiercely and more overtly political than
it was.
But I kind of found myself going, I could see a connection. In some ways, it was different, but in a way I thought, oh yes, this is really, it's about people creating something and reacting against something and owning something, I think. And I don't know. I know what you mean about the... Well, you know this from a venue like the Oval House, where you must have had a really incredible mix of different types of new work, whatever that means.
Yeah, yeah.
And occasionally I kind of think it's great how the differences you talk about from the world of the Shakespearean and some movement has happened between those two worlds, and we've been part of that as well. But I think we kind of, it's interesting that notion of what I think we've managed to hopefully tread that line between the establishment and something that would be, but I know, you know, by the very fact we're 26 years old and we're co-producing with the people we are, makes us firmly the establishment.
Yeah.
So I'm not in any way intending to be cool or say we're not. Of course we are, by the fact that we're still going. But I think inevitably what happens in anything is that the things that maybe happen on the fringe or in more alternative ultimately always gets embraced by the mainstream. That's the way the world over.
Yeah.
But you know, for me, I, on a personal level, I found it very refreshing seeing the new Les Supremes play at the Old Vic, which was written in its form in a highly theatrical, playful, anarchic way. And I really enjoyed seeing that kind of play dealing with, you know, a big political story told in a highly theatrical, highly spontaneous way, but written by a very, very established playwright and at a very traditional theatre.
In a traditional way, yeah.
I thought this is quite interesting.
Yeah. I think there's something about just thinking about the shits, who I just called idiots, but I meant that as in they are told by an idiot.
Yes,
you referred to yourself
as
idiots.
Yes, clarify that.
Becca and Louise, I wasn't calling you stupid, just to be clear. And there's something about the way they talk about almost being, their work being about anti-virtuosity, about the kind of the accessibility of the attempt or the fuck up or the it is so much what you teach as I recall sense of just being vulnerable and fragile and an idiot.
It's interesting. I think that they you're absolutely right, they really go for that. And I saw the show very early in Edinburgh, and clearly they had I think some technical issues which they talked about quite candidly in the show and in the bar after. But I kind of thought, if I return to see this in a month's time, they won't have polished this in a sense that's gone. They will be celebrating that still.
Yeah.
I think in a sense for us there's always been a slight tension in a good way between the naivety and anarchy of what we're exploring. At the same time, in some ways, I think we do celebrate the virtuosity of the performer. I think there's a sense where those two things, they sound contradictory, but I'm fascinated by the skill of a performer to sustain an idea, to be able to play with something. And I think that's always been at the heart of us, is that kind of tension. And I suppose, in a sense, that's what comes back to what I said at the beginning about that if there's any legacy, it's wrapped up in the kinds of performers that we are and the performers that have worked with us. Because I think, if anything, we celebrate anything at Tolman, we celebrate the role of the performer. And that's not to negate everybody else's role, but I think it's at the heart, because of what Hayley and I are, it's at the heart of what we're about. It's seen through that prism somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, this is a slightly weird conversation in that we've worked together, like, because we worked on Troyes and Cressida, and you taught me, but we also don't really know each other.
Yeah.
So I have a slightly odd insight in a way that I don't with anyone else talk about. Because I remember, I think probably in the Globe one day, you leaving the room in like a you were clowning your ass off just for shits and giggles. It wasn't like, and things going wrong, purposefully, virtuosically. But it, if I'd been an outsider not knowing what the context was, you'd kind of think that it was this absolute bumbling idiot who couldn't walk out the door. And it's really sort of stuck with me of that the incredible control. Something about controlled failure. Don't know where I'm going with this, right? Yeah. Something about like allowing the fuck up, allowing the failure, almost encouraging it because that's a way into a new thing. Mm. That I feel like I see a lot in your work.
Yeah, I think the sense of being ever present, or to be in a place where it can only be theatre, it can only be a live thing in front of an audience, and I think we're constantly searching for that. And kind of reveling in that experience, I think. And I think I keep returning to the performer, but I think we've been fortunate over the years to work with performers who are incredibly relaxed in that world. Mm. I mean, the biggest example would be Pefferbridge, when he and I were doing My Perfect Mind, and it was just the two of us. And I think he had the brilliant combination, which I hope I have when I'm his age, hopefully, is that maybe some older people have, of not caring. He didn't really care. And I found that really, really endearing. I learned so much from the fact that he didn't really care. Of course he cared. Yeah. But on level, it appeared that he simply didn't. So that when we shared the stage, he didn't really... And the structure of the show, to be fair, gave license and space for this. But if something was on his mind, he would talk about it in the show. He wouldn't suppress that desire. And because of the structure, it would be my job to kind of help steer us back into some kind of structural...
Yeah.
But the audience loved that. And I think they enjoyed the fact that it wasn't like anything else. Now, we don't seek to do that. You can't seek to do something that's original. But I think sometimes through stumbling on an idea and the people involved, it can take us to a place that for us feels... slightly different than hopefully for an audience, they go, oh, I never expected, I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't this. And it's not like a play, and it's not like a, it's not stand-up. But I suppose that's what the blurring of lines has always interested us, I think.
Yeah, and there's something about, I just think about that because I remember seeing it in New York, something about like the liveness of, you not knowing what the fuck was going to happen. And I think that's... maybe that's when I talk about kind of the line from you guys to contemporary performance. Maybe that's what I mean. This sense of this isn't all predestined.
Yeah,
necessarily.
Maybe that's what we're if we to come back to shit theatre. I think maybe that's the thing: the comfortableness with the fact of we don't quite know everything here.
Yeah.
But we're seeking in however we do it, and shit theatre do it in a very different way to us. We are seeking to reassure you that it's okay.
Yeah, we hold you.
Exactly. In the same way that you are aware that these guys don't quite know everything and potentially don't quite know what they're doing, there's something about them that reassures you. Yeah. And that contradiction is a very interesting one.
Yeah.
I feel in safe hands, but they don't seem to know what they're doing. It's an odd...
Do you know what? Because I know them a little bit, and it's because they're some of the smartest people I've ever met.
No, I'm sure.
And they
without
do.
A doubt.
But it's, you know, I...
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, no. The skill to do that, the skill to look...
No, that's... I have taken my hat off, and that's... I completely... I don't know them. I saw the show, and I chatted to them briefly, but I had no doubt there's a fierce intelligence at going on there between them and in them, and through their work.
Yeah.
Those things where people misread that type of work at their peril, because it's like when sometimes we've, you know, again, coming back to some of the physical stuff we do, and companies like Spy Monkey were very different to us, but I sometimes get frustrated when people go, oh, that's easy to do that. You know, that kind of what appears... What appears frivolous.
Yeah.
You go... You can have many opinions about whether you like it, or you can have any opinion you like, of course, but if you don't like it... But I think the idea that that is an easy thing to do, you go into a room and try and achieve that, and very quickly you will go, wow, this is not so straightforward as I thought. So, you said a kind of controlled anarchy or a control... You know, it's not all random. It's not at all.
It's really carefully thought. Other things, there's so many things I want to ask, and I'm conscious that we don't have that long today. A new question that I'm trying to ask people is, what has failure been for you? Because I think I'm the background to this, I guess, is that I'm definitely approaching middle age now, and I've done, like, apparently I've emerged. Don't know where I've emerged to, and I'm consciously kind of aware that I'm not a bright young thing anymore, even if I ever was. And what does that mean? And it's a constant in this industry. There's this constant thing of, like, just managing it. I'm just carrying on. I found failure really useful and really fucking awful at the same time. So, wisdom, please.
Failure. Gosh, yeah. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, of course, it's come in the work itself. It's an intrinsic part of what that is.
Mm.
But I completely relate to someone who's approaching middle age from the other side. I kind of completely relate to what you say when you say, I'm getting away with it, or I'm just about clinging on. Or I think, however apparently successful one can appear to be or be perceived as, I think there's, unless you're very, very self-confident or deluded, I think you're going to question that all the time, I suppose. I mean, and also I suppose it's how you look at what success is in a way. You know, we've not had enormous commercial success in a, you know, people have stepped around us. With My Perfect Mind, there was two or three talk times about the show going into the West End.
Yeah.
I never, much as I enjoyed the breakfasts and the lunch that someone was giving us, I said to our producer, I just think it's not quite... If they were suddenly going to recast it with Ian McKellen and Toby Jones, maybe someone, a bad idea, I'd see that show. Maybe they would take the punt, but no disrespect to Edward, who has had an extraordinarily illustrious career. We're not quite well known enough in a show that would be perceived as quite alternative.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't see that as a failure. I think we've had enormous sort of opportunities with our work.
But Ian McKellen and Toby Jones couldn't do that.
Well, there you are. I don't know. I'm sure they do a brilliant job of it in their own way. But I think I only, if I think about, I've got so many things that I still want us to explore and do, and I think it's, and we certainly made shows that if I look back on deeply flawed things where I thought, well, if I had another go at that, I'd approach that differently. Not necessarily big failures, but things where inevitably, if you've got any sense of examining yourself, you go, oh, why did I make that choice, or why did I? But in terms of a bigger notion of what that is, part of me feels it's that constant attempt to, maybe this chimes again with what you said, to persuade people to let you do it. I feel like we're always, because we're not giving them a script. On the whole, we're not saying, or if they ask for a script, there either isn't one, or we're trying subtle ways of not giving it to them.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's not about getting, it's not that we're not confident in what we do, but I'm aware that there is that sense of still persuading people to invest, and I mean that in the biggest sense, in an idea. And I think we've learned from different shows, and I think the biggest thing is for us to try and keep that focus on the work. It's not always easy, but is to think about it in that sense rather than, oh, am I getting those opportunities, or are we getting that kind of opportunity? It doesn't really answer your question, but I don't know. It's a good thing to reflect on. It's certainly a good thing to reflect on.
Yeah, I don't think there are answers to questions on this. It's always a fairly loose, freewheeling chat.
Yeah.
It's a total out of the sort of left field, because you're from the Midlands, aren't you? As am I. Where are you from?
Birmingham.
I'm from Wolverhampton.
Ah, brilliant.
And I think you were the first actor I ever heard having my voice on stage.
Interesting.
As a young gun. And it's a sort of small hobby horse of mine in my head, and I sort of wonder, were you ever thinking about kind of representing that voice? And you're allowed to say no.
No, I think it's interesting, and I think you're right. In fact, you know, I think it's really important that you can see yourself in some shape or form. I mean, it's one of the biggest things that theatre has to do, is to represent in some way. And I kind of... I kind of know what, now you've made me think about it, if I think about school trips to the theatre, yeah. I never heard anyone who sounded like us.
The ever. Only time I ever heard a Midlands accent was in a production, was after I'd seen you in something, and it was in a Midsummer Night's Dream, and the Mechanicals were stupid Brummies, and I was like, fuck you.
No, thank you. No, I agree. It's interesting, I think. Of course, sometimes one does a job where you have to change how you speak. That's part of being an actor.
Yeah.
But I think in its essence, and particularly in the more comic territory, that sense of being able to really play from yourself in some way makes a difference. The notion of have we ever... it's kind of played around in our heads a few times around ideas about whether... Even if they're just things you discuss in the pub, you know, to create... You still don't... It's funny, with, and again, I might sound... I can say this to you because you're from the Midlands, of course, and we can sound potentially quite chippy, but it's still an accent which I think is often connected to something comic. Now, you could argue, oh, well, Peaky Blinders has done that, but all the Birmingham accents are terrible.
They're fucking awful, aren't they?
Right, I can't believe anyone's from Birmingham.
Yeah, so, I can't watch it because of
for
it.
That
yeah.
reason. Well, I auditioned for it. I have to admit, I auditioned for it. And I said to my agent, I bet I don't get this. I said, I really... And I kind of, you know, I spoke to my brother and his friends just to get back into that groove. And sure enough, I didn't get... I'm sure it's because I wasn't right. But part of me went, but I'm from there.
I'm from there. You've got to give me this job.
Come on, what's the matter with you?
Bloody hell.
But I kind of think it still has... It's one of the few accents that's never kind of become cool. It's always remained slightly... Which has made me go, oh, I'd really at times like to do something where, not for a gimmick, but... You know, they are the central romantic love interest. They are the, you know, and people, as you say, still in a slightly patronising way, will do Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
They wouldn't make them all Scousers or all, you know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, that's a funny, that sing-songy accent, you know.
Yeah.
I can't possibly reveal this because it might not happen, but we are doing something that in some ways has a Wolverhampton connection. Possibly. Or is rooted in Wolverhampton, an accent I really...
you know, should you need anything that I can dialect, do, I'm available.
Exactly. We can't get any actors from Wolverhampton because they don't exist, but you could be our dialect.
All right, excellent. Brilliant. Okay, so I'm running out of time with you, so the question that I ask everyone at the end is, when you go from this place, and you can take that to mean this room, told by an idiot... Or this astral plane.
Yes, okay.
What is it that you want to leave behind?
Well, as we've been kind of talking, obviously, in a sense about the idiots, we've always believed, Hayley, John and I think from the beginning, and certainly Hayley and me over the years, that for us, the company had a life whilst some combination of us were committed to it. So it's not a situation where we go, oh, I don't want to do it, then we'll put an advert in the stage and someone else can run. This seems a very odd thing. So it would end, I think. This might sound slightly romantic, and it's probably influenced by the Stan and Charlie work in there, inevitably, which has a kind of romanticism about it. I think I'd like to leave behind a collection of shows over the years that, for a brief amount of time in that room, if you saw it, you experienced something that really made you laugh, really provoked you, captivated and moved you, and it existed for that time and was gone. And we've never felt the need to record anything or have something published, really. But something that you might go, oh, do you remember that moment when that happened in a particular thing? So I suppose it is the ephemeral. That's what the notion of theatre is for us, that it's there and it's gone. So I think fleetingly probably something like that, yeah. Mm. Some.
It's interesting you started talking about... The great comic routines and techniques and things that are kind of passed through actors, and one of Rachel Briscoe, who used to work at Oval House with me, is really fond of talking about how the meaning of the thing of the show it goes on in the people that saw it forever. It's always changing, and they're always kind of, for as long as they remember it, it's in dialogue with them. And I sort of like that we've kind of come a circle, because that's what it's about, I guess, passing that next thing that someone else will then inherit, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Nice. Have you got anything else that you want to say?
I don't think so. It's been a very pleasant half an hour. Again, it's quite provocative, as we've only just started 4 days into a new show, a rehearsal, and it's quite interesting to have this dialogue about stuff in this kind of area, you know. But no, thank you very much.
That's right. Tell us, show's on at Wilton's.
Show opens in Plymouth. The Strange Tale of Charlie Chaplin and Stan Laurel opens, I think, something like the 15th, 16th of November in Plymouth.
Yeah.
And then it comes to London at Wilton's Music Hall as part of the Mime Festival from the 13th of January.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Cheerful. Thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.